This is Dish and Dirt with Gary Pickren, South Carolina's only podcast dedicated to the real estate agent craft. And now, the host of Dish and Dirt, Gary Pickren.
And greetings, everybody, and welcome back to yet another non-critically acclaimed, non-award-winning episode of Dish and Dirt. I'm your often opinionated, but rarely wrong, if ever wrong, host Gary Pickren, coming to you from beautiful downtown Columbia, South Carolina. This is the very end of August 2023. That's right. Summer is over. Kids are back into school, and now we get to move into football season. So today, our episode is going to be part two of the conversation with Jeff Wheeler, in which we're going to talk about all the ways that plaintiff lawyers and the Department of Injustice is attacking real estate agents and the way y'all earn a living. And as we mentioned on our last episode, this could be very disastrous, not only for the industry, but also for buyers and consumers alike. And we are going to try to work our way through the rest of those cases. Last week, we did the main case. Today, we're going to cover three or four other cases. All of these seem to tie together with the multiple listing service, the clear cooperation rules, and are really putting our industry in dire peril. So we're going to go ahead and start back here with Jeff. We're going to pick up right from the conversation where we left. So now, Jeff, let's move over to the second case, which is also very concerning. This is called the PLS versus NARS case. Tell us, what is PLS and what does it have to do with us?
This is really interesting from a couple of perspectives, not only the case itself, but DOJ's position on this. So NAR has a clear cooperation rule that requires all listings be input into MLS within 24 hours. The majority of MLSs across the country are owned and operated, as we discussed, by realtor associations. Some, like ours, are private, but virtually all of them have the same standards. And the purpose of that was for listings not to be withheld from public view for a period of time. It was to preempt any potential fair housing issues. That's where this rule came from, and people forget that. So the policy does allow for some exceptions, specifically distributing information to agents within the brokers. So if a RE/MAX office has a listing within their office, they can discuss it among their agents without going into MLS, but they cannot market it to the general public. There's some very specific exceptions. PLS was called the Private Listing Service. It was a group out in California because some companies started having in-house exclusives. They were retaining listings, and this listing service sued both NAR, they sued the California Realtor MLS, they sued Bright MLS, and several others on that rule, saying they had to be able to hold listings out if the consumer wanted it. The U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals sent the case forward, and DOJ filed an amicus brief in support of PLS, which that seems to be exactly the opposite of what their position has been in previous cases. You're seeing large companies now institute in-house off MLS exclusives. Howard Hanna has a program called Find It First. Compass has something called Private Exclusives. Open Door has Open Door Exclusives. So you're seeing not just local offices hold listings, you're now seeing companies nationwide test in-house exclusives. So if you think about the premise that listings are not going to be made available industry-wide and buyer broker commissions can't be shared, the combination of those two things, Gary, is a really fundamental disruption of our business. One of the points that's been interesting, and you and I have had this conversation, you addressed in previous podcasts, and so correct me if I make a misstatement, but our law does not allow someone who doesn't have the listing to market the listing. I think there's some very specific things. Yet the MLS, through IDX technology, allows listings to be shared on other brokers' websites. So if Zach Wheeler lists a piece of property, it can show up on any other company's. So you can make an argument that that's marketing. But that's done through the IDX technology. Well, again, there's a very large national brokerage firm that is testing. They have gotten out of IDX technology, and the technology that they're using, I think, is a VOR technology that does not distribute listings to other brokers' websites. The technology that you absolutely have to put your name, address, CMLS, excuse me, your MLS number and email and so forth into the system before it can even be accessed. So you're seeing companies now take away the distribution and bringing them in-house and not sharing that information. So this whole Penn lawsuit, which started at one level, a private MLS wanting to take upper-end exclusive listings, and the example I believe that was used, POS used, was that there were certain luxury category listings that they wanted a certain group of brokers to make available. So if you're dealing in $10 million properties, it REMAX has a luxury program, CallBanker has a luxury program. It was defined by that, but they sue the MLS because they blocked that. So that's the second piece about this, is if that case moves forward, does it allow brokers to maintain listings in-house and not make them available to other brokers, either through the MLS or through IDX technology? It's actually VOW. The market's being tested in Cleveland as the first test of this technology where they've pulled off. One of the interesting quotes from the president of that company, I'll read it to you. This is a specific quote. He stated, quote, "We know so many of you go out to get a hard-earned listing that gets marketed and scraped by so many different people as opposed to yourself." So the intention is very clearly to retain the listing in-house and receive both sides of the side. Marry that, counselor, with the fact you're not sharing commissions to buy a broker, and you have a world that we won't recognize how to function in, and nobody's thought the way through the combination of those two.
Why do I care as an agent if I put a listing on the MLS and it goes into IDX and you take it and put it on your website and say, this property is offered by Gary Pickering, courtesy of Blair Cato? Why would I oppose that? I want you to do that. I want you to go find me a buyer. That's the whole purpose of this whole thing, is for you to go find me a buyer.
It's almost like there's an illusion of conflict being created to make a point. When a seller lists his house with a broker, they have one objective in mind. They want it sold.
Right.
When a broker takes that listing, they have the same objective in mind. They want it sold. I think this is somewhat of a reaction when Zillow first started getting these IDX feeds and selling the leads to the brokers. That's where this essence of this issue came up. It has less to do with the MLS and a whole lot more to do with private portals than it does with just the MLS. So again, we're taking a problem that could be solved with a process change and litigating it on a level, the consequences of which will totally undercut how we work for our sellers and our buyers.
You're absolutely 100% right. All the seller cares about is you selling their house.
Right.
And I this comes up all the time when I'm doing speeches before Realtors Association. Can you or can you not take a picture of a house being offered by somebody else and put it on your social media and say, hey, look at this cute house over here in Shannon. If you want to look at it, let me know. I'll be happy to show it to you. As long as they put the name, in my opinion, as long as they put the name, Coldwell Banker, Jeff Wheeler, I have no problem with it. But what happens is, it utterly amazes me, is that somebody turns these agents in saying they're marketing property without a listing agreement. And I'm like, why would an agent turn the other agent in? You want as many eyes on this property as possible. You're getting free marketing, free advertising. It's going to more people, more circle of influence, and a better chance of you selling the house. Why do you care?
We have a list here in the office of agent open houses every day of the week, where people are spending money. We have one of the mortgage bankers that makes prime rib. So you create all this time and effort to get people, agents, to look at your property, and then you're ticked because somebody put on Facebook, come look at this great listing that Zach Wheeler's marketing in West London. I don't care. Bring them out. That's what's important.
I probably would go to the biggest, if I was a real estate agent, go to the 20 biggest buyer agents and say, here, put this on your social media for me.
Yeah.
What a free way to market.
Yeah. The objective is to get it sold. But again, you made a point very early in this conversation that I agree with. There's a lack of fundamental understanding of how our industry works. And so plaintiffs, lawyers, and in some cases regulators, in some cases DOJ, takes a very myopic view of one particular issue. And instead of tweaking it and fixing it, there's a nuclear bomb sent to blow it up without understanding the ramifications. So I think that issue, that particular litigation with PLS combined with the buyer broker commission rule, that's a pretty tough pill to swallow, figuring out how to manage going forward. And again, I don't want to create it's not the apocalypse.
Right.
This could be years away from settlement. This could be negotiated. Plaintiffs could lose. But once you start down this path, certain things are going to happen. And as agents and as brokerages, we need to understand the potential and we need to start thinking about it, both from a legal point of view, from a practical implementation point of view, from a training and education point of view, you know, we've got to be prepared for, there's going to be some change in our system, the degree of which will be decided by the courts. But we need to be prepared for this.
Absolutely. Well, a couple more things to understand about this case, and you may find this very interesting. Do you know who owns Pocket Listing Service, PLS?
I do not.
Well, I did a little research before today, and if you've ever watched the show Million Dollar Listing Los Angeles with Josh Flagg and all those guys that are on there, so there's a company on there called The Agency, and I think that's where Altman and Flagg and all of them work. Well, the owner of that company is who owns Pocket Listing Service. So I think you should call it Pocket Listing Service. Now they call it Private Listing Service.
Right. Right.
So, and if you ever watched Million or the Real Housewives, yep. One of the Real Housewives is his wife, and she's worth like $100 million herself, in addition to this guy who sold more $200 million plus dollar homes than anybody in the history of real estate. So they have lots of money. And there's two other people involved in this lawsuit, David and James from that television show. If you remember mm-hmm. the two English gentlemen
yes,
who were selling houses, they are also involved in this. So David and James, as nice and lovable as they are two people who are absolutely screwing you over now. So I just find that funny that it's these million-dollar L.A. listing guys that are doing this to you.
Interesting.
So the other thing I will add to this, and then we'll move on to our next case, is I do find it interesting that being a member of the MLS is voluntary. Nobody's required to be a member of the MLS to be a real estate agent. In fact, the letters MLS aren't even in, I don't believe, are in our statute 4057. And if you're a member of an organization, you have to follow their rules. I mean, that whole aspect of that is just mind blowing to me.
Gary, just to follow up on that, you know, one of the things that you'll hear is that, well, you have to join the MLS to get your listing syndicated. And that's just not true. Zillow and other portals allow for independent distribution of listings, not through an MLS.
Right.
And so that argument is just specious. It's just done fly.
And they keep claiming that it's a monopoly and that it's a 6%, which we've already debunked the whole 6%. But if you remember, in this community particularly, we've had discount brokerages come in offering a set fee of $2,500 to do everything. And they simply haven't worked for the most part. And when they argue, this is one of the DOJ claims, which I find to be completely absurd. If they get rid of clear cooperation, they said it would bring more competition and bring the rates down. Jeff, do you know how many real estate agents we have in Columbia and in South Carolina as a whole?
I'm sure it's in the
44,000 real estate agents in a small state of South Carolina. Not about more competition to bring the rates down. There's 44,000 real estate agents you can hire. So that's a complete garbage as well.
Well, even if you look at just NAR's numbers, and let's stick with the 1.5 million most recent membership number, and you divide it by the most recent transaction numbers that I've seen, a forecast of 4.5 million. Unless my math has gone bad, which it could be, that's three transactions per agent. We are not short of competitors. That's never been an issue. And there are a ton of business models from the small fee that will put an MLS for you to the full service brokers and everything in between. So I totally agree with you. The change in that policy has nothing to do with increased competition. That's never been a problem in our industry.
Well, let's move on now to our next case. And I mispronounced this. I'm sure it's Nosalik. Nosalik versus MLS Penn. So tell us about that.
Yeah, this is interesting, not so much for the case as it is for what's happened in the case. So the litigation is against the listing service, is against NAR and the member brokers, which in this case were, again, the large franchisers, Anywhere, Producing Owners Realty, Berkshire Hathaway, REMAX, and so forth. The multiple listing service is a private MLS, just like CMLS, owned by the member brokers. And the MLS just settled with plaintiff's attorney for $3 million and has agreed to cooperate with plaintiff's attorneys against its own member brokers. And so what you're seeing and where this is important to us, this is a private MLS. One of the points that was made in the settlement, and again, I'll read this as a quote, Penn is not required to abide by NAR rules, but nonetheless adopted a rule similar to NAR. So one of the issues that this has created in Inman, which is a well-known real estate group, publishers and a great organization, known those guys for 40 years, they talk, this is now allowing listing agents to change compensation after a listing has been put in the listing service. So you could literally go out there and I could say, I'm going to offer I'm going to list your house, Gary, for 5%. I'm going to offer 2.5% to cooperating broker. Cooperating broker shows up and says, well, I'm going to change my compensation to 2 because there's no rules. They've gutted the rules. Remember we talked earlier in this conversation, you can get rid of buy broker compensation, but you have to replace it with a process by which that compensate, and they don't have that in this multiple listings. It's the largest MLS in New England. And you know, one of the fears that they've talked about is it will disfavor buyer agents from non-traditional brokers. I mean, it's a very, the fact that the MLS separated itself from NAR and its own broker owners to reach a settlement is very disturbing.
And throughout all of these cases, one of the things that concerns me more when you talk about antitrust is that this promotes the consolidation of agents into large brokerages. If you think about it, if you can take a listing and only shop it amongst your own people, then I have to be in your company to see that.
So let's take your point to a geographic step. Let's just say that you have a particular company that specializes, and you're the major broker in let's just say Northeast Columbia, just to pick a geographic market. And you choose not to syndicate your listings anymore. So you've gotten away from IDX technology, and you're distributing your listings only among your own agents within your company. If you want access to those listings, you have one option: be part of that company.
Right.
And if you are a small company, you're going to have significant resource challenges to match that.
Right.
So the effect of not allowing the sharing of distribution does exactly the opposite of what they wanted in terms of building competition. You know, again, I hate to keep repeating myself, but no one thought through the consequences of the decision. They've targeted the wrong group. They've targeted an industry that really does as good a job of policing itself as any industry out there. And instead of looking at how do you modify certain things, they're trying to blow it up. And when you start seeing defendants splitting like you've seen on an Acela, that's a disturbing trend. And I do think, you know, in the case of our MLS, they targeted a private MLS. They did it a decade ago when they came after Consolidated Multiple Listing Service. Mm-hmm. So I think we need to be prepared both as a industry and as a multiple listing service to respond.
Well, I think you're 1,000% correct in what the outcome of this could be, because it will actually go opposite. They're saying it will create more competition. Yeah. I think it will create less competition because it will consolidate agents into bigger brokerages, because those bigger brokerages can hold the listings and not share them with others. They can play with the commission rates and how they share amongst themselves, because the 6% or 5% or 10% all going to go to them. And so how they disperse it amongst their people would never even be disclosed to anybody else. Yeah. And so you're going to run a lot of these small agencies out of business. And not all consumers want to work with a big agency. Some of them want to work with a small agency. And that's the whole purpose behind the outlawing of the pocket listing. Because if I am the biggest agency in Columbia, South Carolina, and I run the northeast part of Columbia, and I have all of those listings, then everybody else outside of the northeast Columbia that's not part of that company will have absolutely no access to those. I will not be able to service any of my clients who want to live out there. And today's market, where we're sitting with the historic low inventory, how could I service anybody? Because if one company controls a sector of town, the rest of us are basically out of business.
Well, let's take your argument one step further, because you brought the consumer into it. So let's say you've got that large company dominating Northeast Columbia, and I'm Jeff and Zach Wheeler in downtown Columbia, and we have a client that wants to be out in that particular area, but we don't have access to that listing. My client now just lost his or her representation. Because I cannot provide them the data they want for the neighborhoods they want. So they'll most likely end up going. So now you've not only taken away the ability for that consumer to pick the representation. If you don't want dual agency, you just force them into a dual agency situation.
Absolutely.
So again, I think those are some of the consequences that could come down. Again, not to create panic. Nobody needs to panic. It's not the apocalypse. But there are things in motion that we need to be prepared for and be thinking in advance how we're going to respond and react to whether the litigation is lost, or if it's not lost, if there's some settlement or rule changes, how we're going to respond to that. You're seeing that being done in a microcosm now, as mentioned earlier, with Bright now allowing zero compensation to be offered, Howard Hanna keeping in-house listings, brokers getting out of IDX technology. you're starting to see those pieces break up a little bit. We need to have a well thought out plan. So how we're going to continue to serve buyers and sellers equitably in this market, how we're going to make sure fair housing continues in this market, how we're going to make sure that distribution of information is communicated in this market. And right now, each one of those is being challenged.
And the fair housing, I'm telling you, if these rules go away, that's going to be a big problem. It's going to be a huge problem because there's going to be all kind of complaints of fair housing issues. Certain people are not going to be able to have access to certain areas of the houses because they're controlled by one agency that may not serve that particular contingency.
Yeah. Even if there's not intentional.
Right.
There's de facto.
That's what I'm talking about, de facto.
Yeah. And you got to deal with it. And no one's looking at that. I mean, again, this follow to its worst extreme creates problems for the consumer. The industry will figure out ways, it always has, to adjust to it. The consumer is going to be, if you're a buyer, you're going to be coming out of pocket with a lot more money. If you're a seller, your marketing is going to be limited. I mean, there's all these pieces that have to be addressed.
Well, let's talk about the last case, which is actually positive. We're actually going to talk positively today about one thing. Let's talk about the Rex case, the Rex Real Estate against NARS and Zillow. Tell us about that one.
Yeah, this is an interesting case that was started as a lot of cases are in on the West Coast side of the country. And they filed action against NAR and Zillow. And the premise was that Zillow, because of its relationship with NAR and NAR owned multiple listing services, was not promoting their listings to the same effect that they were NAR listings. And that there was a violation of restraint of trade. There was collusion. The problem that the court determined, it may have been today or yesterday, it's fairly recently, you may have a better date on this, but very recently, was there was absolutely no evidence of collusion at all, zero. And NAR was dismissed with prejudice from that case. Zillow has an algorithm that shows, like most online entities do, that shows certain listings, and Zillow is still being challenged on an algorithm for what listings show up at what regularity. But NAR, who was the primary focus of this suit, and what's interesting, the company that formed this lawsuit no longer functions as a real estate company.
Right.
I mean, they exist solely as a litigant in the transaction. They're not even operating business entity. So in the good news side, the federal court ruled that no, there's no collusion between Zillow and NAR. There's no evidence of that. There's no evidence of restriction whatsoever. They'll allow Rex to go forward against Zillow. Most people think Zillow will prevail because the documentation on listing distribution is pretty clear. I mean, it's math and they can produce those numbers fairly easily. But on the good news side, the voice of reason came up and NAR was dismissed with prejudice from this case, which is great news for all of us.
And it said the court ruled there was no evidence there was a MLS agreement to segregate, conceal, demote non-MLS listings on Zillow websites or mobile platforms. And they went on to note that NAR's no commingling rule was optional, and that about 29% of realtor-affiliated MLSs had not adopted the rule without any repercussions from NAR. So on its own, the rule does not constitute direct or circumstantial evidence of an anti-competitive agreement between NAR and Zillow. So that's good to see as well.
We're 1-for-4 so far. Three more to go, but 1-for-4.
1-for-4. Now, as we move on and finish up today, talk about this T360 that you mentioned to me when we were talking the other day. What is that and what are we talking about here?
Alan Dalton formed a firm. He's one of my favorite people. I've been in our industry for decades, a brilliant man, and they do a lot of consulting. One of the things that they've talked about is that as they evaluate these lawsuits, their attitude is similar to mine. We don't really know the outcome. You don't want to overreact, but you really don't want to underreact. And he called these things that is foundational change in our industry, that the way that and we've been through these foundational changes before. I mean, when I first started in this industry, listings were distributed by mimeographed pieces of paper. We had two multiple listing services because some of the brokers didn't get along. We didn't know what agency was, Gary. I mean, everything was sub-agency. So right. If you were an agent with Bob Capes selling a Tom Jenkins listing, the Bob Capes agent technically was a sub-agent of Tom Jenkins Realty. So then we I remember when you, Ryle, first got with Earth Available Realty and buyer brokers came up and we all panicked was buyer brokers. And I remember the Real Estate Commission said, you know, it might be a good idea if you guys start disclosing agency and what the options to the consumers were. And we learned how to do that. And I think what T360 is saying is that we're at a point in our industry that it's going to change. We don't know the depth of that change, we doggone sure better be starting to get ready for that. You know, and things that we need to do, agents, we need to get better at disclosing. When I worked as chief operating officer for Realogy, one of the big statements was disclose, 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 disclose often, disclose frequently, disclose completely. You know, we've got to get really good in working with buyer brokers and understanding how those agreements work. Brokers have to prepare for alternative business models. And while we're all competitive, we really have the same goal, and that's to get the seller's house sold. And the sharing of fees and the sharing of information is a critical part of that. To throw those two things away in the interest of a plaintiff's lawsuit, I think is a foolish decision. So I'm not for 1 second suggesting NAR or we abdicate anything. I'm saying we need to look at where we can make incremental change that positively affects both the brokers community and our buyers and sellers, that it continues our commitment to fair housing and to full disclosure and to accomplishing, and that we push back on some of these things. Again, just go back to something earlier. There is no standard 6% commission. There hasn't been in one large company for 14 years. So let's don't get sidetracked with that and focus on what we really provide, how we can do better, how can we be more informed, how can we embrace different business models that accomplish the purpose of getting the transaction to closing at the best possible structure for buyers and sellers.
Awesome. Two questions. I want to know what your probable outcome you think of these two issues are, dual agency.
I think the outcome will be a negotiated settlement that does not, I don't think the court's going to allow a retroactive assessment of fees. It's so disruptive, and the defendants don't have the ability to pay those fees because they didn't receive those fees. So I think that gets thrown out. I do think there'll be some strong push on a further separation of buyer and seller brokerage fees. I think dual agency is very much at risk. When you already got certain states, you know, whether it goes transactional brokerage or what the final definition is. But if you think about it for a second, if you don't have dual agency, doesn't that in fact further increase the need for the sharing of information and the sharing of fees?
Yes.
I mean, so I think if we look at that, I think dual agency may be the thing that over the next 5 years we'll see more states move against and don't allow dual agency. You may see a more move back to the customer base. You know, there's no requirement for a buyer to be a client. Mm-hmm. So that may be a step in it. But I think dual agency is the outcome that you're going to see change in the next 5 years.
Where do commissions go from here? Gross commissions.
Yeah. I don't see us getting to the point of a European model that are reduced. I think people see the value. I think the real estate agents in our market, in our industry, perform a valuable service. You know, we've been hearing about the challenges to our model and that real estate agents are extraneous to the transaction. Everything can be automated. Find me a model that has made that work. We all remember when Zillow started opening up bricks and mortar offices. They opened one in Charlotte. It didn't last 9 months. We've seen Compass with its salary model and its stock, I think, is still trading in the $2 and $3 range. And so I think we provide service. I think as prices increase, a natural function is the commission rate is going to decrease. And if you start deep sculpting those numbers, you'll see in markets with higher purchase prices, the commission rate is lower. That's a natural function of the market. I think you'll see an erosion of commission rates. You've seen it again for 14 years, but you've seen the commission rate as a percentage decline less than the price of homes appreciating.
Right. And you see that on Million Dollar Listing LA, when they list what potential commissions are, quickly add them up. It's not 3%. It's not 6%. It's sometimes 1%. Sometimes it's 1.5%. Because you're right. When these houses start hitting $1 million, $2 million, and $3 million, these sellers aren't paying 6%, 5%, 10%. They're paying 2% in a lot of cases for that. And that's one of the things I've always said our biggest risk in this industry is that you sell my house today at $200,000. And I pay you $12,000 using their 6%. A couple of years from now, I'll hire you to sell my $500,000 house. And now that commission's $30,000. And I'm looking to you saying, what did you do different than last time for $18,000?
Yeah. There's a broker, Baird & Warner, great brokerage company in Chicago, that built a scale model like that about 10 years ago. And their average price crossed seven figures. And they were in the point that, we can't justify, this is their words, not mine, you know, a $50,000 commission on this house and a $30,000 commission on this house. So they actually scaled it, that at this rate it's 5%, at this rate it's 4.5%, at this rate it's 4%. And I think you're seeing some of that. And again, you're right. You look at the major markets, whether it's Los Angeles, Houston, Texas to some degree, Arizona, parts of New England. I was in Concord, Massachusetts this past week. Great story. There's a really nice vinyl-sided house located just outside the city limits of Concord, Massachusetts, 3,100 square feet for $2.2 million. Now, the commission rate on that house is 2.5%. 1.25%, 1.25%. Okay. So you'll see that. But I think you're going to see it. It's not a function of litigation. It's not a function of value of the quality of service. It's a function of the price of the property that's being sold.
Well, DOJ just said everybody charges 6%. That's crazy.
I wish I had a picture.
That just doesn't seem to match what they're saying, does it? Imagine that. The government's telling you something that's not actually true.
The Grace Choice was giving them that spreadsheet that our CPA had prepared in all those offices, and that attorney recognizing in minutes, none of this data supports the contention. And I think what came out of that was, which was, again, equally foolish, the lack of requirement of errors and omissions insurance by real estate brokers. Who thinks that's a good idea? But they viewed it as anti-competitive. So, again, I think we need to focus on the big things. If there's some adjustments we need to make in our processes, be open to doing that. But let's don't say the system has failed. It is not. It works quite well. And it's worked quite well for years to the benefit of buyers and sellers. We just need to understand where this is going to be prepared.
I could see us going to an a la carte system, too. I know the Realtor Association has talked about that. If you want X service, it'd be this. If you want this service plus this service, it'd be this fee. And at the end of the day, you add all the fees up, and that's what it costs. Or you can do a percentage. It's up to you, however you want to do it.
Yeah.
I can see that. Do you think the IDX feed will ever go away?
Yes, I do. I think more and more companies are going to look for alternatives in the IDX fee. I think that I don't think it's a good idea, by the way. I think we need to be able to share that data and information. I think that will be driven largely by the outcome of these cases. You know, when you see a large company like Hanna moving towards testing in-house exclusives, that's a concern. And one of the things that's interesting, though, Gary, sometimes the pendulum swings too far and you recognize this did not work well. And again, we can go back to the 70s when we had two listing services in Columbia. And we would sneak each other keys for the lockboxes. And we'd swap. I mean, I won't say the names of agents, but we all had agents to be able to listen to us. We'd swap information with them. And then we realized this is really stupid. You know, we aren't benefiting any buyer or seller with this process. Let's put these two listing services together and move on. And look how successful it's been. And it's benefited everybody.
Well, guys, the good news here is that you have a solid state realtor association here. And very solid local associations as well that are following these cases, that are on top of these things. I can guarantee you that Nick and the guys over there, Byron, they're doing everything they can to stay on top of this. I can tell you that the Real Estate Commission, we have already started looking at this as well. We've asked Mr. Wheeler himself to come and speak to us at one of our meetings coming up. We can look at law changes. Can some law changes actually help relieve some of these issues as well? And I know we'll be working with the Realtor Association as well to listen to them on that. And then the other good news is we have great people like Jeff himself who have been following these cases, who are getting the knowledge out, who are trying to keep us all aware of what's going on. He's trying to talk with the local associations as well. And having those three things for you are going to be the difference maker in this for you in the end, I believe.
Thank you so much for having me on. It's you don't want to create panic, but you want to create awareness.
Very much.
If you're aware, then we can deal with it. It's when you're not on top of things and you end up reacting that the problems come in. So thank you for having me. I really appreciate it.
Jeff, you've been awesome today. Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Thanks, man.
And that's all the time we have for our show today. I appreciate Jeff Wheeler being with us and bringing us such great insight. I have talked to Nick Kramitis at the State Association, and we are planning on having Nick here in the next week or two to go over what the State Association's viewpoint is on some of these matters as well. So we look forward to that. Now please like us, share us, subscribe to us, and come back for another episode of Dishing Dirt. Y'all have a great weekend.